It's time for Native Sun, a program bringing you indigenous news stories on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Today's stories come from the Seminole Tribune and Native News Online. The first is award-winning dietitian Karen Two Shoes Connects Culture, History to Diet by Beverly Bidney from the Seminole Tribune. Nutrition coordinator and Seminole tribal member Karen Two Shoes recently won the Florida Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, FAND, President's Award for her volunteer work with the organization. Two Shoes was presented with the award at the group's April 27th symposium in Riondo for her work as chairwoman of the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion DEI Committee and for putting together an e-cookbook with a DEI grant from the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. The cookbook is comprised of recipes from a cultural and health point of view submitted by Florida dietitians, including Two Shoes. I wanted to bring awareness to the diversities in our dietitians, said Two Shoes, who has been a dietitian for 8 years. Over 80 of the dietitians in the country are Caucasian. Florida is such a cultural melting pot. Fry bread is my comfort food, but there is room for both comfort and cultural food in your diet. For the last 4 years, Two Shoes has made presentations to groups at the University of Florida, Florida State University, and Nova Southeastern University. She also gives the presentations to new employees of the Health and Human Services Department and medical staff. The focus of the presentation is cultural awareness and how history has influenced Native Americans' diet. We Native Americans used to have a great diet, eating off the land and natural foods, Two Shoes said. Then colonization happened and everyone was rounded up to reservations and given their food. That food was nothing like we were eating. White flour and sugar were foreign to our bodies. It's hard to metabolize those foods and leads to health problems like diabetes. In this day and age where food is abundant, it doesn't mean we will go out and eat a salad. Your palate adjusts to the new foods. You eat them. Stressed out people don't go looking for a salad. They want rich energy food. Two Shoes has had diabetes since 2001, which led her into the healthcare field. She worked hard to turn her health around, learned about food and nutrition, and changed her eating habits. I didn't want to be another statistic like my patients who have a hard time, she said. Being a dietitian was perfect for me. I knew I could help other people make better choices. I think that's the key, to understand what foods do you need to eat, what is best for your body, what do you need to know what food does. You can make your own choices. Two Shoes also gives presentations to tribal students, adolescents, and adults, during which she always encouraged them to consider going into the healthcare field. Who can take better care of us than us, she said. I want to encourage more Seminoles and Native Americans to get into the healthcare profession. This is a message I spew whenever I can, and I encourage all ethnicities to do the same. Next, the overlooked cost of VA cuts. Native American veterans face disproportionate harm from staffing reductions by Christina Johnson from Native News Online. Native Americans have remarkably stood on the front lines of the U.S. military service, answering the call to defend the nation. Their contributions span every historic battle of the past century, from World Wars I and II to conflicts in Korea, Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq. Today, these indigenous people make up about 1.7% of active duty service members, despite comprising only 1.4% of the general population. Meanwhile, more than 140,000 veterans currently reside nationwide, with American Indians and Alaskan Natives having served in the armed forces at 5 times the national average, the highest per capita participation of any demographic in the military. Tragically, like many of their comrades, these individuals were also exposed to environmental contaminants, such as asbestos, burn pits, lewisite, Agent Orange, and radiation, causing a myriad of serious illnesses. To tackle this concern, Congress ratified the Honoring Our PACT Act of 2022 to expand healthcare services and other benefits for veterans affected by toxic exposures. Yet while this landmark legislation marked a major stride, its promise is unfortunately compromised now as the country's Department of Veterans Affairs deals with an alarming budget cut under the present administration. Framed as a bureaucratic reorganization, this move has led to dire consequences, including a decreased workforce and even a surge of turned-down job opportunities by qualified health care providers. For Native American veterans, whose access to care already lags due to system disparities, such outcomes pose a direct threat to their health, survival, and the fulfillment of the long-overdue federal obligations. Native American veterans deal with toxic exposure risks. Military service has consistently carried the dangers of toxic exposure, affecting numerous veterans, including many Native Americans. Among the most troubling hazards is asbestos, a natural mineral previously prized for its versatility. The material has become extensively utilized in military property for much of the 20th century. However, this cheap and abundant material has concealed a lethal cost. When disturbed, asbestos releases microscopic fibers that, once inhaled, can lodge deep in the tissues, covering the lungs and other internal organs, increasing the risk of developing asbestos and lung cancers. The risk is particularly severe within the U.S. Navy, where personnel were stationed aboard vessels laden with asbestos. Accordingly, most ships built before the 1980s contained the mineral, meaning military sailors at this time might have spent their years of active duty surrounded by an invisible threat. And since diseases stemming from this exposure typically have a long latency period, the impact of the crisis is just beginning to emerge now. The interactive map indicates that between 1999 and 2017, 2,3,981 to 277,654,000 Americans have already lost their battle against asbestos-related illnesses, with 12,000 to 15,000 deaths reported annually. Mesothelioma alone claims around 2,000 to 3,000 lives yearly, and several studies show that veterans account for roughly one-third of these fatalities. Apparently, a large chunk of these victims were deployed to contaminated bases such as Atlas Air Force Base in Oklahoma, home to 38 federally acknowledged Indian nations, and the Army Ammunition Plant in Iowa, hosting other tribes. Addressing the needs of these affected veterans requires comprehensive health care services, which can be effectively provided by a well-equipped and fully funded VA workforce. The drastic impact of VA cuts on Native American veterans. Significant advancements have been made over the past several years to address the long-neglected healthcare needs of toxic-exposed veterans. For instance, since the passage of the PACT Act, more than 2,745 million former service members nationwide have already filed their compensation claims, of which more than 660,000 have already been approved. Native American veterans were among those who engaged. In fact, nearly three-quarters, or 74.3%, of service-connected American Indian and Alaska Native veterans are now utilizing VA healthcare. This participation is also expected to grow further as the country's National Council of Urban Indian Health calls on more members of the community to start processing their claims to avail of their rightful benefits. Yet this process has been left in limbo as the VA faces several budget slashes that threaten to undermine its workforce and ultimately the quality of care veterans receive. Adapting to these cutbacks, the agency has already downsized by 17,000 employees as of mid-2025 and expects to lose nearly 30,000 positions before the end of the fiscal year. Unfortunately, this reduction signifies remaining VA employees are likely burdened with heavier workloads as well as stretched resources, which creates stress and lowers morale across the system. More alarmingly, such financial strains have likewise contributed to a surge of declined job offers from qualified healthcare providers. Rejections by physicians were specifically four times higher than during the same period last year, a trend that exacerbates staffing shortages and further slows claims processing, delaying medical appointments, and limiting outreach to remote and tribal communities. For Native veterans, many residing in remote rural areas and reliant on a limited network of VA facilities, the stakes are critically high. This is because the federal government bears a critical trust responsibility to tribal nations, which embodies both a legal and moral duty to provide comprehensive health care to Native people. By disrupting the VA workforce as a result of the significant funding reductions, this mandate is placed at great risk, alongside the progress of introduced measures like the PACT Act. Without urgent congressional intervention to restore staffing levels as well as secure sufficient funding, the promise of timely and equitable care for these brave individuals will eventually hang in the balance. Christina Johnson is a Native veteran advocate for Asbestos Ships Organization, a nonprofit whose primary mission is to raise awareness and educate veterans about the dangers of asbestos exposure on Navy ships and assist them in navigating the VA claims process. For more information, please visit our page for Native News Online. Next story is Army veterans take on 10,000-mile ride to support Native communities and find healing by the Native News Online staff from Native News Online. In 2026, Army veterans Randy Merrill and Brian Cassidy will set off on a nearly 10,000-mile journey across Native country as participants in the Hoka Hay Motorcycle Challenge. Their mission: raise $10,000 for the Association on American Indian Affairs, AAIA, and find healing through the road. We are two Army veterans, brothers in arms, bonded by combat, scars, and the quiet battles that never seem to end, said Randy and Brian in their joint statement. PTSD and pain followed us home, but we refuse to be defined by the damage. The Hoka Hay Motorcycle Challenge is far from an ordinary ride. Spanning thousands of miles across Turtle Island's back roads, it demands unwavering physical and mental strength, spiritual reflection, and humility. Riders navigate the route without GPS, sleep under open skies, and face unpredictable terrain and weather conditions, all while remaining grounded in their purpose. To make the journey possible, Randy and Brian are seeking sponsors to help cover their essential travel costs. In addition to the $10,000 they aim to raise for AAIA, they are also fundraising another $10,000 for expenses like fuel, safety equipment, maintenance, tires, and daily essentials. "We're committed to finishing this ride with integrity and purpose," they said, "but we can't do it alone. Every sponsor helps carry us forward, mile by mile." For them, the road represents more than just a challenge. The Hoka Hay Motorcycle Challenge isn't just a ride, it's a test of endurance and spirit and soul. The rhythm of the engine drowns out the chaos in our heads. Every sunrise we chase is a reminder we're still alive. Funds raised will benefit the Association on American Indian Affairs, the oldest nonprofit serving Native country. Their contributions will support AAIA's core initiatives. 1. Next Generations, which uplifts Native youth and families through scholarships, cultural programs, and healing efforts. 2. Cultural Sovereignty, advancing the return of stolen lands, ancestors, and indigenous languages. 3. Becoming an Ally, a public education campaign, building broader awareness of Native nations and driving equity. This ride is about raising awareness of the strength and resilience of Native nations and doing our part to support justice and healing, said Brian, our Purple Heart recipient, with combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. "This challenge represents something deeper than miles traveled. It's about healing, service, and standing in solidarity with Native peoples," added Shannon O'Loughlin, a citizen of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma and CEO and attorney for the association. "Randy and Brian are not just riding to raise funds. They're strong, non-Native allies carrying a message that Native nations are sovereign and diverse Native homelands and cultures are worthy of protection." Supporters can follow the riders and donate at indianaffairs.org/Hoka Hay Motorcycle Challenge. Individuals or organizations contributing $500 or more will be recognized as official ride sponsors with their name or linked logo displayed on the association's challenge website. To be featured, donors should email their logo and website link to cc@indianaffairs.org. after making a qualifying contribution. This offers a meaningful way for sponsors to stand in visible solidarity with Native peoples and support the mission of the ride and the AAIA. Every dollar gets us 1 mile closer, said Randy, who served 15 years in the Army. We're riding for purpose, pride, and to stand with Native peoples across Turtle Island. You're listening to Native Son on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I am your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Next, federal court halts transfer of Oak Flat to mining company amid ongoing lawsuits by Levi Rickert from Native News Online. The 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals issued an emergency injunction on Monday, temporarily blocking the Trump administration's plan to transfer Oak Flat, a sacred and ecologically sensitive area in Arizona, to a private mining company. The decision comes as three separate lawsuits challenging the controversial land exchange continue to move through the courts. Without the injunction, the federal land, located about 40 miles east of Phoenix, was set to be handed over on Tuesday to Resolution Copper, a subsidiary of global mining giants Rio Tinto and BHP. Tuesday, August 19th, marked the 60th day deadline following the U.S. Forest Service release of a revised environmental impact statement for the proposed copper mine at Oak Flat, a 2,200-acre site east of Phoenix. The deadline would have allowed Resolution Copper to assume control of the land, if not for the Ninth Circuit Court's last-minute injunction blocking the transfer. Tribes have been on these lands now called Arizona since time immemorial. Over the decades, we have strived to successfully provide for the health and welfare of our people while maintaining our status as sovereign nations, said Maria Dagger, executive director of the Intertribal Association of Arizona. We believe that the health of our people correlates with the health of the land, the water, and the environment that surrounds us, Dagger said. We are hopeful with the news from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and welcome the opportunity to make our case for the continued protection of Oak Flat. In June, U.S. District Judge Dominic W. Lanza issued a 60-day pause on the land exchange while two lawsuits were under review. However, last Friday, he declined to extend that stay, paving the way for the transfer to proceed on August 19th. In response, the San Carlo Apache Tribe, Conservation and Recreation Organizations, and the Intertribal Association of Arizona filed immediate appeals. A separate lawsuit brought last month on behalf of Apache women and girls also requested an emergency halt to the exchange. We're thankful the court has hit pause on this ill-conceived land swap that would devastate Oak Flat and all that makes it unique, said Sandy Barr, director of the Sierra Club's Grand Canyon chapter. This gives us a critical window to continue our work to protect the area's lands, waters, wildlife, and cultural heritage. The proposed land exchange would hand over more than 2,400 acres of federal public land to Resolution Copper for the development of a massive underground mine. Opponents argue that the project would permanently destroy Oak Flat, a site of immense spiritual and cultural significance to the San Carlos Apache and other tribes. The appeal court rightly recognized the gravity of the issues at stake, said Roger Flynn, an attorney representing the groups challenging the land exchange. There's simply too much to lose to let this reckless giveaway of our public lands proceed unchecked. Beyond its cultural significance, Oak Flat is also a vital ecological area, home to threatened species like the ocelot and Arizona hedgehog cactus. The region provides critical habitat, recreational opportunities, and ecological value that opponents argue would be irreparably harmed by mining operations. Next, RFK Jr. outlines commitment to Native American food sovereignty, shares insights on opioid recovery, and whether or not he would ban Hot Cheetos on the res, by Elise Wild from Native News Online. Nimiipuu culture and existence are at the foundation of the Nez Perce tribal hatchery. It's why the tribal management plan implements Nez Perce traditional language, Nimiipuu, into the restoration work that provides 1.4 million Chinook salmon annually into the Clearwater River Basin from the hatchery, which translates into its literal purpose, a place to cause fish to grow. U.S. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. saw this demonstrated during a visit to the site on July 24th with Idaho Governor Brad Little, tribal leaders, and hatchery operators. Secretary Kennedy was able to witness our efforts and better understand that tribal perspective on our first foods and food sovereignty and the state of peril salmon are in now, NAPRSA Chairman Shannon F. Wheeler said. That peril is directed from executive actions by President Donald Trump that canceled agreements with the Columbia River Basin tribes like the NAPRSA in order to move energy production policies forward. This marks a clear distinction for Kennedy's health directives that conflict with President Trump and local Idaho Republicans' economic and energy desires. American Indians are experiencing a food genocide through ultra-processed foods, what they call white death, white sugar, white flour, and white grease, he said in an interview with Native News Online. Many are now food deserts, though Pacific Northwestern reservations have been better off due to salmon access. Native Americans continue to bear some of the worst health outcomes of any demographic in the United States, with the highest rates of chronic disease such as diabetes, heart disease, and cancers. Data released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in 2022 revealed that Native people live an average of 67.8 years, a decade less than white people. After the tour, Kennedy shared how the NAPRSA hatchery is an example of legacy tribal food sovereignty systems that are providing a greater health outcome for the people and the environment, both locally and across the entire Pacific Northwest region. Kennedy doubled down on his health stance while responding to further limitations that his office cannot ban tribes or businesses from selling ultra-processed foods like hot Cheetos or soda, which are linked to chronic illnesses. We wouldn't prohibit it, but we want massive education programs encouraging healthy eating and choices to improve food access. There's technology now that could deliver good food anywhere at modest prices. We're exploring ways to reach isolated areas, the elderly and young people, he said. We're encouraging SNAP program changes. Some of those changes became a reality as Kennedy and USDA Secretary Brooke Rollins announced reforms to the SNAP program, prohibiting the purchase of soda with federal food aid. The goal is simple: reduce mass suffering from diabetes, obesity, and other long-term medical conditions, said Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Marty Makary. On tour with fish. At NAPRSA, Kennedy saw incubation areas where fish like Chinook salmon, steelhead kelts, and lamprey grow before their release into water streams from the tribe in central Idaho to water systems in Washington and Oregon. The hatchery is state-of-the-art, Kennedy said. The hatchery is very thoughtfully and ecologically run. They are attuned to genetic diversity and restoring the runs of particular salmon in specific tributaries. For more than two decades, Kennedy served as the president of the Waterkeepers Alliance, a global nonprofit organization working to protect waterways around the world. During his tenure, member organization Columbia Riverkeepers sued the federal government in 2017 for failing to mitigate high water temperatures in the Columbia River Basin, killing 250,000 adult sockeye salmon in 2015. The NAPRSA hatcheries opened in early 2000 after nearly 20 years of planning aimed at shoring up salmon populations lost stemming from a series of dams along the Columbia and Lower Snake Rivers. It's a measure for mitigating the loss of salmon that has occurred due to the construction of eight dams, Kennedy said. A 2024 federal report showed that dams along the basin have degraded various salmon species to less than 10% of the historical populations, restricting access to a traditional food source that tribes in the region have relied on for subsistence since time immemorial. The report found the dams were violating the treaties of 1855, which enshrined the tribe's fishing, hunting, and gathering rights. The report, the 2023 Resilient Columbia River Agreement, which aimed to restore salmon populations and develop clean energy solutions to the dams. The move was hailed as a historic win for tribal treaty rights, but the victory was short-lived. Last month, the Trump administration withdrew the federal government from the deal, effectively putting salmon populations at further risk and violating treaty rights. Operations like the NAPRSA hatcheries, which together produce 2.1 million steelhead and chinook a year, have proven critical to bolstering diminishing populations of salmon in the Columbia River Basin. The Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, CRITFC, oversees management policy and offers technical fishery services to the tribes in the Columbia River Basin, including Nez Perce. Jeremy Five Crows, Nez Perce, CRITFC Communications Director, told Native News Online that today's salmon runs can be wholly attributed to the hatchery system. They're the lifeline right now, Five Crows said. The hatcheries are the reason why people, both tribal and non-tribal people, can even fish for salmon because there are millions of fish being put into the system through the hatcheries. Salmon is central to the traditional diet of the Columbian Basin tribes. We eat a lot of salmon in this area, and that's really what's driven the tribes to put all of the resources and time and effort and decades of work to protect and restore salmon. Ultimately, in seven generations, under ideal circumstances, we wouldn't even need hatcheries. Kennedy extolled the proficiency of the Nez Perce hatcheries and emphasized a desire to collaborate with the department to transform food access on tribal lands. Indian Country involves three departments, the Interior with the BIA, the USDA running SNAP programs, and my department running IHS. We're collaborating to facilitate access to traditional foods on reservations, Kennedy said. My vision, collaborating with Doug Burgum and Brooke Rollins, is to use all of our agencies together to change food systems on reservations. So far, those collaborations are steering toward eliminating all Biden-era programs and hitting legacy programs like SNAP with reorganization that is creating various outcomes that could prevent support. For instance, the USDA's Local Food Purchase Assistance Cooperative Agreement Program was designed out of COVID relief and created networks that would work with 90 different tribal food banks, food systems built to purchase products from local farmers to get healthier local options to nearby people with USDA support, are now in limbo. This week, the federal agency opened public comment for tribal governments and other stakeholders to share their ideas on the USDA's reorganization plan. The public comment period ends in August. Feedback can be sent to reorganization@usda.gov. There is new funding to discuss. On August 1st, the Senate overwhelmingly approved $8.2 billion to be spent this year on the Federal Food Subsidy Program, WIC. It comes from that Military Construction, Veterans Affairs, and Related Agencies Appropriation Act that totals $27.1 billion in discretionary funding. It also includes $1.87 billion for the Agricultural Research Service and $425 million for SNAP. Mental health. Kennedy shared with Native News Online how cultural practices, such as those implemented within operations at the fish hatchery, can be essential to addiction care. For many Native communities, restoring traditional food systems are part of a larger effort to center culture in mental and behavioral health amid the scourge of the opioid crisis that disproportionately affects Indian Country, one of the most pressing health issues in Indian Country. Kennedy highlighted his experience with addiction and treatment. He was in active heroin addiction for 14 years and has been in recovery for four decades, as a strength to lead the nation's health services. He also finds this to be an immediate common ground to find solutions with Native American communities. In September 2024, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, released data showing, for the first time in years, a decline in overdose deaths among general population. While the drop has been celebrated among public health advocates, it is a different story in Indian Country, where overdoses are still on the rise. This touches every American family, but Indian Country suffers most, Kennedy said. Steve Knockwood is a peer recovery specialist for the Wabanaki Public Health and Wellness in Maine. The organization offers addiction recovery services that are rooted in Wabanaki culture, tradition, and values. Its food sovereignty program restores the traditional food systems of the tribe, including in the distribution of it through a food bank that is open to all. It's this food that has been grown by our own hands, by our own people, for our own people, with no barriers, no stigma attached, Knockwood said. You're going to see tribal leaders, along with our elders and single mothers, all getting what is meant to be shared. It's teaching us that it's okay to rely on one another, and that is one of the biggest concepts in recovery. You've been listening to Native Sun, a show for Indigenous issues on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Kim Chupa Cornell. Music is Land Back by Hallucination.